Hello, everyone. My name is Father Roger Landry. I'm speaking to you from New York, where I work for the Holy See at the United Nations. I had the great joy a year and a half ago of being present in New Zealand to give some talks. What a beautiful country you have. And I was very touched by the beauty of the faith of so many, especially young people, who saw some of the secularization at work in New Zealand, like I fight here in the U.S., and we're really very hungry to try to bring the treasure of the faith to others. And so it's great to be with you in this conference, and I look forward to talking to you about the new evangelization and how to do it in a truly Christ-like way. In order to be able to do that well, I'd like to share my screen with you so that you can have something other to look at than just me. I've entitled this talk, The Heart of the New Evangelization, Needing, Knowing, and Loving Jesus Back. But to dive into the new evangelization, we first have to understand what it is. Lots of people use the term without sometimes defining it. The new evangelization is not just sharing the faith, but there's a particular audience and a particular methodology involved. It's an outreach to those who have been baptized but who aren't living the faith, who are structuring their life either without God altogether or without the sacraments in the church that he's founded. Popes Paul VI, John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and Francis have all talked about it quite a bit and tried to spur the entire church, all the organs in the church, to work as one to meet this challenge. New evangelization is a reproposal of the faith to those in whom the gospel really hasn't sunk to the depth it ought to. It's distinguished from mission proper to those who have never heard the faith before, never received any of the sacraments, sometimes don't even know who Jesus Christ was. And it's likewise distinguished from pastoral care, helping the people who are frequenting the sacraments, etc., to grow in their knowledge, in their capacity to share the faith. The new evangelization goes to those who are, in a sense, born and fled, those who have drifted away from living our faith. John Paul II first used the expression in 1979, both re-evangelization and new evangelization, but eventually in 1992, Santo Domingo, he said that what's new about the new evangelization is not a new message. That's the perennial message of the church, the kerygma that Jesus himself enfleshed and entrusted to his church to proclaim. But it's new in terms of freshness with regard to method, so we're going to be using some different means, perhaps, to be able to do it, like we're using this virtual conference. Ardor, so there has to be a new fire involved, because in many places that has grown lukewarm. And expression, some of the categories, for example, of the 13th century in Paris that Thomas Aquinas used aren't going to be as effective today. Likewise, certain of the categories even of the 1960s and 70s, or the music of that time period might not be effective. We always have to adapt secundum modum recipientis according to the way of the receiver. And so there always has to be this freshness of expression if we're bringing it to people who, when they first heard it, weren't as compelled as they ought to be. And there are many people carrying out this incredible work, just to name a few. Word on Fire, the Augustine Institute, Dynamic Catholic, Ascension Press, the Alpha Program, Evangelion, the Legion of Mary, the Near Catechumenal Way, new movements, websites, videos, podcasts. So many people are involved in this effort, but we still need to hone it and tighten it because, let's be honest, we're losing more than we're gaining. Why is the new evangelization needed? You see the future Pope Benedict over on the left side. In 2000, as Cardinal Ratzinger, he gave a homily to the catechists from all over the world who would come to Rome for the Jubilee of Catechists and the Great Jubilee of 2000. And in that homily, he spoke both about the why and the what of the new evangelization in a way that I've always found incredibly compelling. He said, a large part of today's humanity doesn't find the gospel in the permanent evangelization of the church. That's to say, they don't find the convincing response to the question, how to live. That's why we're in need of a new evangelization, because if the art of living remains an unknown, nothing else works. To evangelize means to teach the art of living. And Jesus is the great teacher. At the beginning of his public life, he said, I have come to evangelize the poor. And what's the greatest spiritual poverty? It's a lack of happiness. It's a lack of direction. When Jesus has come to evangelize the poor, he means, I have the response to your fundamental impoverishment, to your fundamental question. I will show you the path to life, the path to happiness. Rather, I am that path. And he said, we're searching for, along with the permanent and uninterrupted, never-to-be-interrupted evangelization, a new one, capable of being heard by that world that doesn't find access to the classic one. People have wandered away from the faith because they just haven't been captured by it. Because a lot of the times in the catechesis of the church and parishes, they really haven't found God. They've found practices, they've found religion, but they haven't found what they're made to seek. Sometimes that's been a failure in the church. Sometimes it's been an emptiness within them that has just made it very difficult for them to receive it. But it is a fact, because if they had really discovered Christ in the church, if they recognized God was on the altar, if they recognized that God could send their soul back to its baptismal beauty every confession, they recognized that when they came into the church, it was different than praying any other place, they'd still be there, and they'd be bringing the whole world with them. Pope, the future Pope Benedict, summarized by saying this art of living, which is the new evangelization, can be communicated only by one who has life, who is the gospel personified. It has to come from Jesus. And so the new evangelization puts Jesus front and center. Jesus came to teach us the art of living. He is the definitive response to the prayer of the Psalms, teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. He came as the way, the truth, and the life, saying to us not just do what I teach, but follow me. He came not just to inform us with truth, but to form us so that we might, together with him, live the truth. He taught that a disciple is not above the teacher. It's enough for a disciple to become like his teacher. And Jesus wants to form us in his image and likeness so that we might have life from him and have it to the full. This has always been the mission of the church. St. Paul labored among the first Christians until Christ be formed in them. He urged them to train themselves in godliness, in holiness, to be Christ-like, to put on the mind of Christ, so that they would be able to say, as he echoed, it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. That's the real goal, not just to follow Christ, but to be assimilated as branches on Christ the vine. How do we grow in this way? How does Jesus form us? In 2007, in Central and Latin America and the Caribbean, they had the fifth Encuentro of all the bishops from throughout that vast region at the Marian Sanctuary in Aparecida, Brazil. And they published a document which launched a continent-wide new evangelization. That whole process was cheered by Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio of Buenos Aires, Argentina, the future Pope Francis. And it described five progressive stages in our Christian formation. The first and fundamental starting point is an encounter with Jesus. We come to meet him, to know him, to recognize that he's alive and at work, not just in the world, but in my life, calling me personally to follow him. Often that begins when someone announces us that God is real and starts to make our heart burn by sharing him with us. Second stage, once we've come to know Christ, is we recognize we're not who we're supposed to be. We want to be more like him. And so Jesus gives us that means. We'll talk a little bit later about what conversion really signifies. But it means that we're not going to build our life on the quicksand of the world and according to worldly categories, but to build on Christ, on his word, on his criteria. Once we start literally turning with Christ, converting, then we begin to be his disciple. The word disciple in Greek means student. The word student in Latin means to be on fire, to be zealous. For us to be Jesus' disciples means we're on fire to learn what he has to teach us, not just as a category that we can pass regurgitating an exam question, rather to start to live the way that he has taught us, because he teaches us above all how to live. That's what it means to be his disciple, that we begin to apprentice in his way of life. Once we start doing that, we recognize that faith isn't supposed to be a solo sport. supposed to be a familial, a community endeavor. God is a Trinitarian communion of loving persons, and God created us in that image. And so the social nature that we have is meant ultimately to bring us into the communion of the church. That's what we see in the first Christians, for example, that they had all things in common. They prayed together, they made pilgrimages together, they ate together. And they actually sacrificed, like we sacrifice financially for our family members. No one was a stranger after baptism. And the church still has this. We see it, for example, in families and strong parishes and ecclesial movements and religious communities, that these are folks who make a pilgrimage following Jesus together. And the fifth and last stage, the real fruit of these first four, is when we become missionaries. As we grow in communion with the triune God and with each other, we experience the need to share our faith with others, to bring them into communion too. Just like St. Paul, we say, woe to me if I don't proclaim the gospel. The same Lord Jesus who says, come to me, says to us, go into the whole world and proclaim the gospel to every creature, teaching them to carry out everything I have commanded you, knowing that I'm with you always until the end of time. The fruit of our faith is sharing it. And this is something that the main editor of the Aparecida document brought to the whole church when he became the 265th Peter, Pope Francis. The whole goal of this process is to become an evangelized evangelizer. Once the gospel really seeks deeply, we can't hold it in. He, in the Aparecida document, called that same expression, missionary disciples in communion. That's who the church is supposed to be. And he tried to reawaken us to this mission as Christ disciples together with each other. So preaching the gospel is the first task of the church. But what would happen if we really took these words seriously, if we really made preaching the gospel our first duty? So we realized that missionary outreach has to be paradigmatic for all that the church does. Every school, every parish, every food pantry, every hospital, every charitable outreach. It's part of that mission of love, which involves the truth and charity. So the primary reason we evangelize is the love and salvation Jesus gave us, urging us to greater love of him. What kind of love would not feel the need to speak of the beloved, to point him out, to make him known, he asks. If we're not urging, if we're not urgently trying to spread the faith, do we really love Jesus? Do we want others to come to love him? Do we recognize loving Jesus, that he died for the people we could share the faith with to try to bring them into communion? It changes us. He likewise said, we have a treasure of life and love that can't deceive, and a message that can't mislead or disappoint, one that ennobles us and is never outdated. We need to share that treasure with others. Listen, so many people share working diet plans with others. We're supposed to share the medicine of immortality. And in one of the most important passages of his papacy, he said, it's impossible to persevere in fervent evangelization unless we're convinced from personal experience that it's not the same thing to have known Jesus as not to have known him, not the same thing to walk with him as to walk blindly, not the same thing to hear his word as not to know it, not the same thing to contemplate him, worship him, find our peace in him as not to. We know well, he concludes, that with Jesus, life becomes richer, and that with him, it's easier to find meaning in everything. This is why we evangelize, because Jesus makes that type of a difference. He's done it in our life, and we want him to have that same explosive impact in the lives of those we love and know. But Jesus doesn't just show us the art of living, but he trains us in the art of helping others to learn how to live, so that with us, they might have what he came into the world to give us, life to the full. Jesus' 3 years of public ministry were not just to proclaim the gospel himself, but to form the 12 apostles, the 72 disciples, and ultimately the whole church, to live and share the faith with the help and under the guidance of the Holy Spirit in a continuous Pentecost. Today, what I'd like to do is focus on 12 ways Jesus trains us to train others to live well. First thing in the new evangelization is the priority of prayer. It always begins with God. We see in Jesus' own example that before he called, he prayed. Even spending an all-nighter praying to the Father before he called the 12 apostles. And Jesus, when he told us to look out and see how ripe the vineyards are for harvest, told us to pray to the harvest master for laborers for his harvest. We recognize in this that we don't earn disciples or followers of Jesus. They're gifts, gifts given by the harvest master to us. And so we first start by praying to him. We need to pray not just for the new evangelization in general, but for individuals that we want to see come to Christ and come to the practice of faith. We need to pray as hard as St. Monica prayed for her husband Patricius, for her cantankerous mother-in-law, and for her wayward son St. Augustine. The whole church, led by Mary, prays for these sons and daughters. Second thing Jesus teaches us is about the parable of the sower and the seed, that it's not just sharing the word, it's not just doing so well, but we've always got to take a soil sample. Because sometimes the reasons why the new evangelization hasn't been as successful is not because of a defect in the sower, but because of a problem in the soil. The soil matters. Jesus mentioned four types of soil in that parable. Hardened, stubborn soil. Rocky soil that was superficial because it had limestone 3 inches underneath. Thorny soil that would choke the growth of the seed. And he called those thorns not just sins, but worldly cares and anxieties. When we're sowing in those contexts, when people are superficial or they're really hardened against the faith, either because they're inveterate sinners or because they think they've already heard it before, or when the priorities of the world, either their concerns or their pleasures, gain more of their attention, sometimes we're going to fail because of that soil sample. So we shouldn't take it personally. We must concern ourselves likewise with the soil. Third thing is we need more than words. In the instructions to the 12 and to the 72, Jesus focuses not just on the message he places on our lips, but on the way that message is packaged. We can't contradict what we're proclaiming. We need to flesh it, rather. So we've got to live with peace if we're going to proclaim peace be with you. If we're going to be announcing the kingdom, we have to be living with the king. If we're proclaiming his providential love, we can't be packing a second suitcase, or what Jesus says, a second tunic or a second pair of sandals.